and be a little bit more aggressive with this money and test some things out and mm-hmm. don't have this fear of failure that's there. I think any organization that has that kind of approach is going to be open to innovation, is going to be open to change. I like that idea of how do we have that within an organization that then allows them to go off and experiment, to go off and, mm-hmm. and test the waters on this AI world that we're living in. More often than not, the answers are inside the organization. And let's tap into these people. Let's tap into the processes that we have to come off and be innovative.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the John Allday Airday. I'm just adding that part in. You won't find him by that term. He is an experienced entrepreneur and technologist, CEO of CMS Solutions Group and executive coach for Caring Guide. Welcome to the show, John.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate you having me on this beautiful June when we got College World Series going on. I'm a big time Longhorn fan. We didn't do too well in baseball, but we got the girls playing in Oklahoma City on Wednesday, and I am looking for, I'm actually going to be going down there to cheer them on and all, but appreciate you having me and look forward to talking to you.
Absolutely. I like you 10% more now that I know that you're a Longhorns fan. My boys have decided to cheer for A&M. I think it's just to do whatever the opposite of what I say is. Uh-huh. But anyway, so there's like A&M Hey Dudes and Crocs and other stuff, and it just makes my skin sizzle. Pray for me. Pray for our house.
Oh, you're gonna, they'll change their mind once they come to the light. I actually have two little granddaughters that I have taught them to do the hook'em finally. Yeah, they're two That's years, good. A little over 2 years, and I had them right both. On. Yesterday I saw one, and she got this. I'm like, no, that's not it. You gotta go here. And then I got them both going there. So
otherwise, she's trying to rock out or say,
rock out, rock out.
Those are good things too, but hook them. Yes. Yeah. Well, you got to train up a child in the way they should go.
Yeah.
Tell me today, John, what is on your mind?
Yeah. And it's not just today, it's been for a while. We all talk about AI and what have you. And over the past couple of years, my passion has really been around how I can help nonprofits and how, especially coming out of COVID and a lot of the financial challenges and then mm-hmm. personnel challenges and things of that sort. You got a lot of nonprofits right now that are being challenged financially, but also being challenged from a workforce standpoint. Mm-hmm. And there's this buzzword that everybody thinks, you know what, I can use it and then I'll be able to write great emails. There's a whole lot more that you can do than that. And right. So what's on my mind is, you know, how do we embrace it, but also understand the challenges that are inherent about it, and how can nonprofits specifically start to look visionary perspective on how they might be able to incorporate some sort of a philosophy that allows technology to really take them to another level?
Yeah. Man, this is top of mind. I've listened to 3 AI podcasts while driving to and from Fort Worth this morning. So mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff is top of mind. But what you bring up is something that the host of that show, Paul Reitzer, it's the artificial intelligence show. I highly recommend it. Okay. But he was talking about companies that are trying to adopt, any organization trying to adopt AI needs to have a policy that governs, like, what are our use cases? Where does it fit in? Where doesn't it fit in? Like, where does it cross maybe a moral or ethical or legal boundary for us? Obviously, nonprofits may have some unique legal circumstances given the nature of certain grants that may be federal, that may be state, that may be tied to a foundation, and that comes with conditions. So there may be some external forces working, I'm not going to say against, but maybe additional constraints that nonprofits have to consider when trying to decide how they would integrate a technology like AI. Because it's not just, oh, new version of Gmail or Google Workspace or Outlook or whatever's out. This is a substantive change to the way in which work is done. And to be honest, in my opinion, the way life is lived, how What are the conversations you're getting into and the things that you're hearing in your circles about, do we bring it in? Is there just skepticism, or are people really wrestling like, we want to bring it in, we just don't know how to set healthy boundaries with it yet?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. The conversation has changed significantly over the last 12 months. When I have my father now using ChatGPT to help my sister with what computer she should buy, he kind of really made the jump over there. The Gonzalo's over there using some of those tools. So you have a lot of folks that have started to use that in their personal life, and they see what it might be able to do professionally, but they are concerned, right? Are they opening up all of their IP, their knowledge, mm-hmm. and all of the stuff that is within the four walls of our organization? Are we going to all of a sudden, open that up to everybody? With any technology, there's the inherent fear that of the unknown. What I like to talk to people about is, how do we start to create a path that allows you to engage there? Because there's certain things, AI has been around, Kenny, you probably know this, for a long time. Shoot, when I was first using Pandora, and all of a sudden, whatever I did, my outfield music was playing all these other music that sound like outfield, right? That's AI, right? So how do we start to look at it and then see where it might fit within the organization that has a limited amount of exposure, but then create that governance model to really start to see how I can incorporate this? Too often, I believe nonprofits, they're a little bit too cautious at the forefront when the for-profit brethren over here are really taking that aggressive stance and moving forward. We have this scenario where we've got to start to move and look. And so it's, let's put the right proper governance. Let's start to look at where it might fit within the organization. It's not necessarily just in marketing and what have you, right? How do we do donor profiling and find out where is the best base to go after? All these different things. So to me, it's looking at it across the organization, taking those baby steps, but taking the steps. Let's not talk about it. Let's just start to do and move.
Like, we don't have to perfect what it is we think we're going to do. As a matter of fact, we may never be able to do that, but we won't have the data, the feedback loops necessary to build a thoughtful approach or policy or governance if we don't start to interact and connect with it. Classic, you miss 100% of the shots you never take situation. One thing I would love to hear you dig into a little is that, what is the belief or the prevailing wisdom in the nonprofit sector that leads to that lag behind in adoption, that more cautious and sometimes to their own detriment? Where is the root of that belief system? Because it's not just one or two nonprofits do it. Like, I see it too in the clients that I work with that are nonprofits and the people I speak to. And I'm curious if you've heard something or generated some insight or noticed some patterns on where that's rooted.
Yeah, I don't know if this is just John Alday's opinion or this is the prevailing wisdom around it. But when you're in a nonprofit scenario, you're working with other people's money, right? Mm. And you got that inherent responsibility to do well, to do good with these donations. And you're also providing a service that is for the greater good, right? From a nonprofit standpoint. So you combine both of those elements together, and I believe you get this cautionary approach. Hey, I don't want to abuse the privilege of accepting someone's donation, and I don't want to screw up the services that I'm providing. That creates a kind of a cautionary approach where innovation might be stifled. I own a technology company, and what is it? The most successful hitter was at a 350, batting average, right? There's a lot of times where I invested and failed, and I made up with it from those investments that worked themselves out, right? So it's that aggressive approach that allowed our company to succeed. And I don't know if you really have that ability in the nonprofit sector, but how do we bring in innovation, and how do we bring in, kind of, let's step aside from the conservative approach and let's try some things out, knowing that maybe this investment might not work. But maybe it's a combination of, hey, I got other people's money and I have to provide the service and I don't want to use other people's money and then it goes for naught because then I've also then suffered on the services side. So yeah, maybe that's it. I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Again, I hate the term devil's advocate because I think he has enough advocates in the world. But the other side that comes to mind, because I'm a firm believer that nonprofit is just a tax status. It's not a growth strategy. Apart from that, there's really not too many differences. And for-profits, they're taking on other people's money in exchange for something that has to get a return. Something a coach of mine said once, he goes, and I don't know, it made sense to me. It's like a blinding flash of the obvious. But one of the other like key differences besides tax status is that there's a separation between the financial transaction and the end consumer. Mm-hmm. And for-profit, that's the same person. And nonprofit, those are two different groups, right? Like donors and then program service recipients, clients, customers. Everybody uses their own terminology. And so it's still, in my mind, I would think they would have almost the same motivation. Like I know when my clients pay me now in this business or when I was selling marketing services with my agency, like it was a big deal if somebody paid me because mm-hmm. I wasn't charging insignificant sums of money, just like nonprofits sometimes don't get insignificant sums of money from individual or corporate donors. And I was like, I would tell my team, we got to knock this out of the park. Like, we've got to do this. We've got to make a great impression. We've got to get the return on investment for this. We got to make sure that we're double checking, measure twice, cut once, that sort of stuff. That really challenged me. And I would probably say I'd feel the same thing on the nonprofit side. I see your point and how you would cross a threshold from being mitigating risk to being risk adverse. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a firm believer, and maybe this is an entrepreneurial thing, which you've been for a long time, is that without risk, there's no reward. And what's interesting to me is that so many nonprofits, when they started, they were trying to break rules. They were trying to find new ways to approach the problem. They were doing all this. And then at some point, they got some success, good for them. But then they started getting money and the money may have had strings attached and they wanted the money to do more good, but the strings were prohibitive or something like that, which is why I'm a huge advocate for have your core values, have a roadmap, understand who you are, and what you stand for, your positioning and where you want to go. Because just because somebody can write a fat check doesn't mean it's going to help you. It may actually hurt you, tank you, mm-hmm. cost you good people. So that's the part that, I don't know, that still baffles me, because I've asked in several talks that I've given to nonprofit audiences and said, hey, who got into this work to make the smallest impact possible? I've never had a hand go up. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell people, yeah, but your behaviors would indicate otherwise. You're playing small.
Mm-hmm.
Now, should you bet the farm every time? No, that's stupid from any perspective. But I do think that there is a way in which you can embrace risk, and maybe, and this is just coming off the top of my head, this sounds stupid, but maybe there needs to be a risk policy. I hate policies as an entrepreneur. I think a lot of policies are just organizational scar tissue that make up, like, we had a bad incident. We're gonna stitch this up with policy, and now that governs everybody forever and ever. But I mean, at least a guideline to how do we evaluate risk, and maybe something like that could be a framework for people to say, is this for us? Is it not? How should we greet it? What's our version of it? Just because so and so down the street used ChatGPT this way doesn't mean we have to.
Mm-hmm.
Because your operations are different, your use cases are different, your needs are different, your staff is different, the repetitive tasks in your organization are different. So I think all those things to say, it feels like the one size fits all, and sometimes the strings that come with checks, I think, are suffocating innovation in the nonprofit space.
I like where you're going with that, like a little Skunk's Works department with a policy as to how we go off and evaluate these projects. And then maybe there's a certain set that says, hey, these we're going to go off and be a little bit more aggressive with this money and test some things out and don't have this fear of failure that's there. I think any organization that has that kind of approach is going to be open to innovation, is going to be open to change. I like that idea of how do we have that within an organization that then allows them to go off and experiment, to go off and test the waters on this AI world that we're living in. More often than not, the answers are inside the organization. And let's tap into these people. Let's tap into the processes that we have to come off and be innovative.
And you and I have talked a little bit about just our coaching approaches when we're working with these organizations. And one of the things that I use, and depending on their needs, I have one or two models here, is do you have a problem-solving method that everybody in the organization uses? Now, with my system and soul clients, I would teach them, it's called DAT, is you got to clearly define it, because again, I need to get this tattooed on my arm. I quote this all the time, and I never give attribution, but a problem well-defined is half solved.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can clearly do that and then align it to, and in our, the system and soul framework, there's a one-page roadmap that has vision and culture and strategy and execution now and in the future. We would align it so the A is aligned to the roadmap, and then we take action. So to your point is we actually got to do something. We can't just keep going around this mountain. So if we define, align, and take action, we have that. Another one would be the 4D model, which comes from predictable success. And for those clients, I teach them, you need data, and then you need a discussion, and then either decide or defer. It's either we have enough information to make a decision, or we need more, or we need a different person in the room in order to make a decision. But the goal is always to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And what bothers me is when I see organizations think that not making a decision is not making a decision, but not making a decision is a decision.
Yeah.
Even though I don't use this methodology anymore, but Chino Wickman, he's a founder creator of EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, in his book Traction, I think he put it, I think it was in like a big font or something like that, but it stuck with me, is it's not what you decide, it's that you decide.
Uh-huh.
You could pick whatever risk profile, you could pick whatever thing. It's just that you decide. It's the equivalent to, and maybe this is about to demonstrate that I have a mild case of road rage, but you ever been driving behind somebody and they go to get in a turn lane, but they put one half of their car in there and the other half is still in the lane that's just for going straight. And it drives me insane. It drives a lot of other people insane. But that's exactly what we do as organizations when we don't just make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless you're taking a stupid risk, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of stupid risks out there. But if you don't decide, you're headed for the median, and that just wrecks the whole car. It would be better off for you to make the wrong decision, figure that out, go back on it, course correct, say, whoops, we made a mistake. We now know this is not the way to go. We're going to go this way. Yeah, maybe we have to loop back around or something like that and go under the underpass and everybody's yelling in the car. But at least you did something and now you've learned something, which allows you to grow.
Yep. No, I agree. It's that decide to act and then act or don't act, right? If you decide not to move forward. And I think when I first started SEMA, I was a Guy Kawasaki disciple, right? It was the art of the start. And it was all about, hey, let's go. It's time to go. And too often we get ourselves stuck where we're just like analyzing this and maybe I don't want to do it. But as a leader, sometimes you just got to make the decision. You got to move forward. And you're right. The decision might be the wrong one, but if you're a vulnerable leader, if you have the ability to take a step back and truly self-assess where things are, you can make a change. You can make a pivot, and it's all still part of the whole plan. Everything that happened before helped you get to where you're going to go. And it is, let's move forward. Let's get a start. And circling back to, you know, that AI, I think if the leaders can say, yes, we are going to incorporate this, and then we can start to put the pulse, we can start to do the things that can get us down that roadmap so that 5 months, 12 months down the road, we're a lot further versus just considering, are we going to do this or not? Yep, completely agree.
I'd be curious of your thoughts on this, since I've had several episodes with an AI flavor. One was from like a marketing perspective. I've had it from a few others, just operational. Since you are a technologist, we can be a little nerdy here. And I say that word with affection, so I don't want to get any emails. But I've heard picking a pilot project initially, or just letting some people find a real specific personal use case, like in their work, to explore something, develop some help there, instead of trying to do this like entire rollout, whether you got 10 people or 100 people. But I can empathize with the leadership who say, if we're going to involve AI and it's going to permeate the entire organization, well, how do we adopt it? Where do we even start? How do we roll it out to everybody? How do we make sure that we have enough policies to cover all of this? What happens if we make a mistake? There's all these things, and they're legitimate, I think, concerns, thoughts, and considerations you should have as a wise leader. But I like the idea of a pilot project, or just having a few people be testers to, like, can you find a use case in the natural course of your job where this would help take a week's worth of work down into an hour or something like that? I'm curious of your thoughts on that approach, or if you've seen others that have helped people in the adoption process.
Yeah, so it goes back to what I said, that a lot of the time the answers are there. And as a coach, we're just trying to help people come up with those answers, because they're inherently within the organization. I think there's maybe some micro projects that are there. There might be something on the marketing team that's completely different than the back office. So where marketing might use it, whether it be donor profiling or just how they craft their messaging and what have you, is going to be completely different than potentially how back office might use it, where we're creating our policies and our voice around all of the material that we've created over the history of our organization. I think you might be able to get a cross-functional team in place where you start to ask them where they think it might work, and then from there start to come up with where might some of these micro projects go. I was had the opportunity to be at South by Southwest earlier this year, and it was fascinating just listening to these leading edge technologists where they're showing AI might go within an organization. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different places that it can permeate that I think if we keep it under one, we might lose the true value that it can bring because we start to focus on that one area. I say all that with also understanding that there's still inherent risks that are involved. We got to put some sort of boundaries on this, or some sort of guidelines to make certain that all of a sudden we don't expose ourselves to some situations that would be nefarious. Yeah.
I think that's wise. And I love the idea that the cross-functional, I heard somebody call it like an AI advisory council of a cross-section within. It wasn't necessarily just the senior leadership team, but it was a cross-section of like managers, workers, frontline, so that they could come together and say, we could use it like this in marketing, and someone else in operations, back office is raising their hand. And then you start to see where the magic is. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about, and this is, again, we might nerd out over coach lingo, so hopefully we won't lose anybody here, but that harnessing the wisdom in the room, like genius within approach, is that coaches, I would even say consultants who usually come with a playbook, but coaches and third parties should be drawing that out. And I hear you advocating for executive leadership, senior leadership, to maybe take that posture as opposed to the absolute holder, researcher of this big decision on AI. How can senior leaders go about pulling those things out in a way that comes across candidly? Because obviously there can be a power dynamic. Somebody maybe there's not a lot of psychological safety in the organization. How would you advise coach leaders to draw that wisdom out so that they can help innovate in the organization?
It's the idea of just being open and vulnerable. And you're a leader, and you got there sometimes, from a certain personality trait that you might have had. But the one thing all leaders need is they need to be open. They need to lead. You got to have followers. You got to have people that are going to embrace that vision that you have. Bringing them into the process creates a scenario where that vision can be not only manifested, but accelerated, right? And so I think a leader being open, understanding their organization, understanding who the managers are that they can lean on and they can listen to, are going to be candid, right? We don't want an echo chamber where they're just going to tell us exactly what we want to hear. And bring those into the fold where we then can take these. I've had the luxury of, I'm actually studying at UT Dallas right now, and my last class was change management. So it was interesting just listening to all the stuff that we know, but then seeing it all in a formulated class. The leader that can harness the talent that's in the room by being open to their suggestions, by asking the questions the right way. As an executive coach, how we ask the open-ended questions and how we're really not trying to come up with our agenda and our suggestion, but allow that person to come forward with where, based off of their experiences, what they can do. So I think it's just being open and identifying those that can help, you know, with the mission. That there's influencers in your organization all over the place. So how do you take those influencers and you get them to buy into the vision that you have? And the vision for a nonprofit, it's clear and center. It's that service that you're providing. And all we're trying to do is provide that service into a greater reach and to do it as efficiently as possible. And I think you bring those folks in and then make yourself open to those suggestions and you move forward.
I love that. And what's funny is what you bring up about how leaders got where they are and where they go next is a subject of conversation a lot with my clients. As a matter of fact, I'll be in Dallas next week from this recording, speaking at the nonprofit, North Texas Nonprofit Leadership Institute, about one-on-one leadership development. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be some other stuff on like organizational development and team development and performance, but that you usually got it because you're a scrapper, you're a learner, you're a go-getter. And then someone says, okay, now I need you to understand this. And if you haven't spent your life in technology, but you're like, I'm a really good HR person, I'm a really good salesperson, I'm not a technologist, I'm not an IT wizard, it's like my fifth grader has to help me use my cell phone sort of person. And now all of a sudden you've got to understand the most advanced technology the world has ever seen. It is a big ask, but maybe one that prompts you to reach out and connect with your team. And I love what you said about that just creates that vulnerability.
Yeah.
Which I think only enhances your leadership if you don't pretend like you have to have all the answers. And I do this stuff for a living and I still have to remind myself like, I can say I don't know. And that doesn't somehow make me the dumbest human that's ever walked the planet. I may feel like it for a minute, but we'll go there.
What I'd add on that, Kenny, by the way, is just if I got some of my past managers that have worked for me or employees, they would have thought, geez, John, I wish he had come up with this approach 10 years ago. So I've gone to his coaching classes a lot sooner. Yeah, because how I got to where I was is different than where I know where we need to go, right?
Yeah.
So it's that idea to just be open and be vulnerable. And you do that, I tell you, there's so much more that your organization would be able to achieve.
Yeah. That's something I don't think in any of my conversations or even away from the show, now that I think about it, is the link between vulnerability and innovation. Mm-hmm. I talk about it a little bit with the four stages of psychological safety, and you hit challenger safety and that's the innovation threshold, but just that vulnerability piece leading to innovation, I think is a connection that a lot of people, myself included, apparently, maybe wouldn't have thought of. It feels like that idea comes in through the side door, which are like my favorite ideas. I'm like, oh, wow, that's a different flip on it. Yeah. So now you've given me something to chew on the rest of the day. Thank you. I'll be distracted. I'll have to go throw it in ChatGPT's deep research and
there you go.
Explore all the linkage. Now, we have different leaders at different positions that listen to the show. And if they're listening to this, whether they have the authority to really change some things, or maybe they are just an influential person, they're a manager, but they're not at the senior level and they're on their way up. If they wanted to start to make moves and maybe make a case for introducing AI in their nonprofit to make sure, hey, we, just because maybe our cause is rooted in timeless human decency, doesn't mean we can't push innovation in our organization and how we operate. What's something that they could do in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to start to make that case and introduce it into the organization?
I would say, I'm a big believer in that one-on-one communication. Yeah, just yeah, that physical, hey, let's sit down for a cup of coffee. You're at the break. Yeah, the break room. I don't know if there's many break rooms anymore. But just, I would say what you can do in the next 24 hours is just, you know who your people are.
Yeah.
Call up and say, hey, I want to talk to you about this, about AI, right? I mean, how it might be able to, and just have a dialogue with somebody who you deem is an influencer, or you deem that has an impact much greater than what, you know, what they're doing on a day-to-day basis within their organization. And just having that one-on-one discussion, just to hear that person's perspective on, because we're all using it already, right? So it's just, how do we have that dialogue? So that'd be one thing that they could do that will also help them as a leader. Anytime you're connecting with an employee, you know, that's that. And then if on the flip side of just what you want to do on your own time, it might be just thinking about that one task, that one thing that's always there, but you go, God, it shouldn't be this hard. And then just to spend the think time on how I might be able to tackle this from an AI, from a perspective that will, you know, that ChatGPT or Gemini or any of the ones that are out there might be able to to assist. But it's really, let's spend some of that time, that think time, that relationship time over that 24-hour period, and then let that be the seed to where things go for you.
Yeah. No, that's really good. I would add maybe like a part B to your second point, because I love that step back and imagining, which is in both of those, is look, let's just step outside of the world we have right now. We have the shared outcome. Let's imagine how we could get there in a more effective, efficient way. Is you can use the free version of GPT or Claude. I think there's one for Gemini.
Gemini's out there. I'm a big Google user. Gemini is phenomenal. And there's this thing called Notebook LM, Kenny.
Yes.
Notebook LM is a game changer for your organization. When you can create a language model that's specific to your language, the data that you're feeding it, and do that right on the fly. But yeah, definitely using one of those guys.
But you could even ask it and say, I've started using my custom GPTs because I have a few of them as their thought partners now of, I'm thinking of this, I want to arrive here, but I don't want this to happen, but I do need this to happen. Yep. What are the possible options? Please help me brainstorm. And it'll just start throwing stuff out, because one thing I've found is most people are better editors than they are inventors. That works a lot in like copywriting and things like that, is I can tell you what a bad idea is. So if you just have GPT spit out some bad ideas and then you narrow it down and then you just keep going down a rabbit hole, which, by the way, you can end up in a rabbit hole. I've been in a few of them lately, but even the free versions can really help you there. So if you want to have some think time, or if you want to have some collaborative think time, there's that too. John, I know that there's probably 37 other topics that you and I could cover in great detail, but we're going to save that for more episodes. If people wanted to know more about you, more about SEMA Solutions or Caring Guide, your work, where would you send them?
Yeah, probably my LinkedIn profile that I provided you is a good starter. I think I'm at that point in life where, you know, really when my passion lies around some nonprofits, the Children's Advocacy Center of North Texas, or CASA, understanding those groups and the impact that they have in your community, it is huge. So I would really probably more direct people to, hey, look at those organizations, see their impact, and understand what they do. And if you're in a position where you have the ability to donate to one of those and then press on that button and donate on the with those guys. But
yeah, you'll get no argument from me on that. Love the work that Children Advocacy Centers all over the place, because they're everywhere. But I love the work that they do and how they help and trying to make the world a little bit better for children. John, thank you so much for your time. This was really fun. And hopefully we're going to grab that coffee soon. I think break rooms are just like Starbucks and Panera and coffee shops.
Yeah, that's basically the new break room.
Outsourced break rooming. I don't know. We'll workshop it. I'll put it into GPT and see if there's a better term.
There you go.
But thank you so much. And to the listener, thank you so much. And I say one because I'm just speaking to one person, because that's what all the podcast manuals and guides and experts say. You're talking to one. But I really do appreciate and do not take for granted that you spent any time listening to this podcast. It really does mean a lot to me. It would also be a big help if you could let me know some feedback, leave comments, ratings, reviews, things like that, to let me know what you want to hear, what you want to see, because this is also on YouTube as well as all the major audio platforms. I enjoy these conversations, as you can tell, but I make them for you. And I want to make sure that I'm bringing valuable conversations, perspectives, topics that you care about. But until next time, change the way you think, change the way you live. We'll see you.